With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marcus Speller, and welcome to the Barcelona Legacy podcast. This is the first of a six-part series to coincide with the release of the Barcelona Legacy, a book that explores how the evolution of today's game begins at Barcelona 25 years ago with the pioneering ideas of Johan Cruyff and was taken on by the likes of Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. It's written by one of our panellists, Jonathan Wilson, who writes for The Guardian, Sports Illustrated and World Soccer. And the book is out this month in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. We're also joined today by Jack Pitt-Brook, football reporter for The Independent. In this podcast series, we're going to be looking at six matches that define this footballing evolution from Cruyff's Barcelona to Guardiola's Manchester City. And we begin at the end of this story, looking at Cruyff's legacy today. The match we're focusing on, Jonathan, is Liverpool 4, Manchester City 3 in January of this year, 2018. Why are we looking at that one?
Well, in a sense, it might seem a slightly strange choice that the whole book is about Cruyff's philosophy, how Guardiola's taken that on, how he's reached new heights, and yet we're dealing with a defeat. But I think it's in defeats you really understand how a philosophy works, you really understand what teams are made of. And what we'd seen this season was Guardiola City sweeping all before them, playing brilliant football. We were talking about another invincible season. And this, you know, this game in January, going into that, we sort of thought, well, can anybody stop them? And we found, yeah, Liverpool could stop them. And that presages what goes on to happen in the Champions League. So I think that's, you know, that's quite important to the book as a whole, that this is not necessarily a celebration of Cruyffianism, but an examination of Cruyffianism. And so the defeat is what allows you to see its flaws as well as what makes it brilliant.
And Jonathan's right, isn't he? The way Manchester City were playing in the season in 2017-18, it was incredible. And we've seen Guardiola do this when he went to Barcelona. We know what he did there with Bayern Munich. Had great success, although it didn't win the Champions League, of course. Man City, it translated again. But when they came up against Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp managed to find a way to stop it.
Yeah, that is certainly what makes it so interesting, is that this was a team that got 100 Premier League points and scored 104 Premier League goals. Like, they are, you know, by the measurable statistics that we have, they're the best Premier League team of all time. And that is what makes looking at such a spectacular defeat so exciting. I mean, I think that if they hadn't lost that game, they probably would have gone completely undefeated.
Yeah, I mean, that felt like the last major test. I mean, I guess maybe the Manchester derby that they then did lose.
Yeah, Manchester derby, we saw the same thing, or a version of the same thing, that we saw in the Liverpool 4-3 and in the Liverpool Champions League first leg. That is, you know, City conceding three goals within sort of 10 to 15 minutes. So clearly, like, looking at those three defeats as a whole, you can see, I mean, it seems silly to say when the team is that good, but you can see, like, an obvious flaw, or like at least a flaw that exists that teams have found a way to get at.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Jack, pointing that out with the three goals or whatever it was Liverpool scored in quick succession. As we talk about in other of these other podcasts in this series, it does seem to be that every now and then a window of opportunity opens for 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is.
You've got to score three.
And you've got to get them in there. And you've got to rack them up, because Manchester City did score three goals in that game, of course. But Liverpool punished them. Yeah. And the game was really lost in that little window.
What's fascinating is that you see this throughout Guardiola's career. There have been these games. So this specific game, yeah, I guess we should remind people what happened.
Sure.
Oxlade-Chamberlain puts Liverpool ahead after 9 minutes.
Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Son equalises 4 minutes before half time.
Lovely change of direction, and he's fired it in. He's beaten Karius at the near post. It's 1-1. Leroy Sané.
Morn is very evenly poised, and then suddenly, bang, 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 3 goals in 9 minutes.
Roberto Firmino, the Bobby Dazzler, 3-1, and Mane, payback time. It's a fabulous ball from the technique from Mo Salah, who gets in on the act. Surely Liverpool's day now.
Firmino, Mane, Salah. And Mane had hit the post just before the Firmino goal. And then City come back into it right at the end, and it finishes 4-3. But it was 4-1. And for a while, you see City absolutely reeling. You start to think, this could be 5-6-7. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly what we then went on to see in the first leg of the Champions League quarter-final. 3 goals in 19 minutes there it was. The previous season, City let in 3 in 20 minutes against Leicester. But we saw Guardiola's Bayern twice. Similar thing, letting in 3 goals in 20 minutes. And then the most fascinating thing is if you throw right back to the beginning of the story, to Johan Cruyff, in the 1994 Champions League final, which we'll go on to talk to in the next podcast. Again, it's 3 goals conceded in... 16 minutes either side of half time.
Yeah, something like that.
So there does seem to be something in that philosophy, and I think Guardiola is very much the modern avatar of Cruyff. He learned his football at the knee of Cruyff. He was taken from the academy by Cruyff, the academy which had been founded by Cruyff to be run on Cruyffian principles. Guardiola is Cruyff in the modern age, and maybe he's taken his ideas on. And yet that glass jaw somehow is still there. So brilliant as a football is, dominant as a football is, although they win and win and win and win, like they score hundreds of goals, if you can get at them, they are gettable at. It's just getting at them is very hard.
Yeah, and Jurgen Klopp plays a certain style, as we know, Jack, and his style does seem to have an effect on Guardiola's teams.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think Klopp teams are basically like kryptonite for Pep teams at times. I think it's because of like that kind of ferocious pressing from the front. I mean, obviously, if you play the ball out from the back, then you're more likely to lose it there. And that, you know, if City went long every single time, they wouldn't come into the same problems. But because Guardiola City are determined always to pass out from the back, then Klopp's Liverpool know that's how they can hit them. And that has proven to be incredibly effective. Equally, because City, as a point of principle, City like to defend as far up the pitch as possible. That leaves lots of space in behind. And because Liverpool can get the ball so forward so quickly to their very fast front three, that means that they can get in there. Given the fact that City are really good, they are still the dream opponents for Liverpool, if you know what I mean. Like, because they're so aggressive, they create the opportunities which other teams who are less aggressive don't offer to Liverpool.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point because Jurgen Klopp and his sides, as Jack said, they like to go at teams. Great record against the bigger sides.
Klopp's won 8 of 14 against Guardiola. Nobody else is remotely close to that.
But then, am I right?
I think Mourinho's won 5 of 21 now.
Yeah.
So 8 of 14, you're more than half the games.
Incredible.
Astonishing. And actually, what Jack says about City passing out from the back, in Germany, when obviously Klopp was at Borussia Dortmund and Guardiola was at Bayern, there was a cup game there.
Bypassed it, though.
Where Guardiola's way of getting around this was to stick Javi Martinez up front and go along to him. And,
it'd be interesting if City had a player like
Fellaini could have been.
But it's almost a compliment that was for Jurgen Klopp. The fact that he made Guardiola change his style or change that kind of Cruyffian principle.
Well, and it shows how that Klopp style so worries Guardiola. He's somebody who's been utterly devout to those Cruyffian principles. Minor modification. There's been odd evolutions, but to almost entirely reject them, to whack up to the big man, to kind of, suddenly for one half hour of one game only, His idol was not Cruyff, but Sam Allardyce. Yeah. I think that's a pretty big impact that Jurgen Klopp's had on him.
I think it's pretty clear that Klopp has got inside Guardiola's head. Like that, the main lesson that I took from City losing in the Champions League first leg at Anfield was that Guardiola had changed his normal style of play to try to neuter Liverpool, and it hadn't worked. That is all season City been playing this 4-3-3, and yet for that game, Pep basically tried to go in with a sort of 4-4-2, playing Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva and Fernandinho and Gundogan in the same midfield, which he'd, I think, only done one other time that season, you know, hoping that City could just keep the ball and take the sting out of the game. And it, I mean, it didn't work at all. Like,
yeah, I mean, the only other game that season that they did it was the League Cup final.
When they were
really bad first half, completely. Because Arsenal were even worse, they got away with it. But the previous season, he tried it, I think, five times and hadn't, or maybe won one of the five games.
But it was, I mean, the fact that Pep, who makes such a big deal about how I play the same way, home and away, every opponent, we impose our game on them, like the fact that he would change his system to play Liverpool shows that Klopp's got to him. And also, you could tell it got through to the players. Like, the players were far less aggressive. They were far less purposeful. They didn't really know like what they wanted to do. Like, they knew what they wanted to do, and it wasn't really that much of a surprise when Liverpool ran through them.
Yeah, and I think the fact this is a mental or emotional issue, you then see with Guardiola getting himself sent to the stands at half time in the second leg.
Sure, and it's interesting you say that. Do you think, again, we will talk about Johan Cruyff himself more in the second episode of this podcast series. But do you think Guardiola, because the season had been going so blisteringly well, and of course they finished with 100 points for crying out loud, let's not lose sight of that. But do you think because of that, because, again, plan A was going so well, and they'd already beaten Liverpool, was it 5-0?
5-0.
At home, okay, Liverpool had a man sent off. Do you think Guardiola perhaps rested on his laurels a bit too much when they came into this game? Or is, because we'll talk about that in the next one with Cruyff going into the game against Milan in the final. Or is that not like Guardiola?
I think that's A, not like Guardiola, and certainly not when he hadn't won the league. Yeah, the previous season had been a disappointment. His first season at City, he won nothing. Finished a pretty long way adrift. And there were a couple of games when they not only lost, but got hammered by Leicester and by Everton. Mm. And so I think there were significant question marks. One of Guardiola's great gifts is his perpetual intensity. And that's also one of the things that annoys people about him. I think certainly at Bayern there was a sense that intensity had started to chafe by the end. Laurent Blanc spoke about him even as a player in the Barcelona dressing room that Guardiola wore him out with this constant sort of talking and kind of busyness in the Yapstam sense of the term. So I think while that probably was true of Cruyff in the 94 Champions League final, I think probably not true here. And particularly because it was such an obvious big game. It was one of the two big league games they had left. And for all Guardiola kept saying, and correctly as it turned out, that going through a season unbeaten is just not feasible. Mm-hmm. You're going to get some bad luck. You're going to get a bad performance, a bad refereeing decision, a bad bounce of the ball, whatever, at some stage.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
For all he kept saying that, it must have been at the back of his mind by then, because realistically, the title was won the day they beat Manchester United in November. Mm. And United had had that really poor run when Mourinho, I think, went too defensive in the games away at Liverpool and away at Chelsea, and lost at Huddersfield as well. And suddenly an 8-point gap opens up, then City beat them. So the league title's won. What's left to play for? I mean, I can't believe he actually cares about the League Cup or the FA Cup, although they do you win the League Cup? It's a Champions League, and can we actually set new records? Can we go unbeaten? Can we do something that's never been done before? Can we make a point that my way is not only successful, but more successful than anything ever before? So, yeah, I think this game and the United game that they lost, both of them, he would have been absolutely focused on.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Jack, because, as Jonathan says, the previous season, he disappointed, really. And certainly some sections of the English press sort of revelled in that, really, that this guy was going to, he's sort of coming over here with these kind of Cruyffian principles, call them what you will. And it hadn't quite worked. But then in the second season, Guardiola, having been a bit prickly in some interviews in the first season in England, it was beginning to work. And we saw a more relaxed man in front of the cameras. Well, because he was winning games, you know, let's call it what it is. And his ethos was being played out. But he cut a very different figure and obviously, you know, cleaned up in terms of the Premier League.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important and interesting things about Pep's second season is that he didn't meet TalkSport halfway. There was always, during the course of the first season, do you remember after the Leicester game where he said, I don't train tackles, I'm not a coach for tackles, when people were asking why the City players weren't putting enough tackles in the game, which they lost 4-2. And there was this idea with Pep that if he just started to train tackles, defend deeper, hit it long, pass it less, put Grant Holt up front.
That's all he's got to do.
If City had done that, they would be better in the second season than the first season. Yeah. Which, of course, I don't know if I can say this, it's complete bollocks.
Yeah.
Like, City had, in the second season, City were more true to Pep's principles than they were in the first season. Like, in the first season, they averaged 61% possession. In the second season, they averaged 71% possession. Like, they defended higher up the pitch, they passed the ball more, they were just more of a Pep team in that second season than they were first time around. And that shows that Guardiola was vindicated for his ideas. And it also shows, in a broader sense, this idea that lots in England, we kind of think that to make any idea work in any field, what you have to do is dilute it. If you dilute it, it'll work. You dilute it until the point that it works, which is wrong. Like, in reality, I think you have to, or Pep is an example that, implementing something fully, like maximal implementation, making something work properly, is better than kind of diluting it until it just turns into the surrounding environment.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you said once or twice there that they were playing in a more Pep style,
yeah,
in a more Guardiola style. Is this now a Guardiola style, or are we still saying it's a Cruyffian style, or has he updated it, has he tweaked it?
I mean, that's almost a theological argument. What is the Cruyffian style, even Cruyffian, or do we trace that back to Randus Michaels? I think, Guardiola's success, an incredible success, 7 league titles in 9 seasons as a coach, 2 Champions Leagues.
Don't forget that League Cup.
And the League Cup.
Yeah.
That's more than Cruyff won. Significantly more than Cruyff won. So, yeah, perhaps this has become his style, his own ideas. And certainly I think you see it's more aggressive in certain ways than Cruyff's football. I think he demands more of his forwards than Cruyff did. I think his use of fullbacks I spoke to Louis van Gaal for the book, actually the day of the League Cup final, and he was incredibly intense, as you might expect.
I was wondering what word was going to follow.
he makes you work as an interviewer, keeps asking you quiz questions about who was my defence in 2010. Oh, God,
was it
Stefan de Vrij? But he also is very prescient, and he was saying that the way Guardiola plays, pushing the fullbacks high up the pitch and pushing them both up the pitch at the same time, often relying on Fernandinho to drop in as a third central defender, he was saying he would never have done that. He'd have pushed one up, and that there was a risk that you could get caught, as they subsequently did get caught by Liverpool. But I think that issue with the fullbacks is actually totally key to the whole issue.
Completely.
That the difference in terms of personnel from Pep's first season to his second was he just replaced the fullbacks.
And he spent a lot of money, we should say, but still.
He spent a lot of money that was entirely worth it. His fullbacks in his first season had been Zabaleta, Kolarov,
Sanya and Clichy.
All of them were 31. And they just weren't quick enough and weren't fit enough to get up and down as he demanded they did. So he brings in Kyle Walker for Jose Mourinho sneers at $50 million for Kyle Walker. I mean, every penny of that was worth it. And Danilo and Benjamin Mendy, who obviously had the injury and barely played. So Danilo, Fabian Delph and Zinchenko shared the left-back duties, and Laporte in a couple of games towards the end of the season. But Guardiola identified last summer, right, the issue in the squad that I didn't get right, and actually a weird mistake to make. I think it was a mistake that was, I mean, yeah, how much is hindsight, how much is this to be realised at the time? But I think if you're relying on 4 30-plus fullbacks to play Guardiola's style...
It's a big ask.
Yeah. I guess maybe he thought he had too many other things to sort out.
Sure. Well, one of the other positions that he did sort out, and it was well documented, Jack, was the position of the goalkeeper.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think that was one of the... Again, this is one of these situations where the decision that he made to replace Hart with Bravo looked worse in retrospect because of how bad Bravo was. Like the fact that he couldn't make saves and was rubbish on one-on-ones.
Yeah, and they are problems for a goalkeeper.
Couldn't really kick.
And yet had a 75% pass completion rate in La Liga the previous season.
Which kind of set up this idea that, it was ridiculous to get rid of Joe Hart. He's a much better keeper. But I think like Pep had the right idea. He just implemented it wrong.
Hmm.
Like Hart can't kick. I mean, as it happens, we also know that he's not so good at saves anymore either. But it was only really once he got Edison in from Benfica the following summer that we realised, I kind of see what he's trying to do now, because it made such a difference having a keeper who was so good with the ball at his feet, who was so good, his touch under pressure is fantastic, his passing is brilliant. I remember there was one, when City beat Burnley at one point last season, Sean Dyche said it's like City got Ronald Koeman in goal.
Yeah.
The way that he can kind of just ping the ball on like these kind of 50-yard diagonals or...
But I think you really saw that the game where they beat Tottenham 4-1.
Yeah.
And we've seen that pressing high against City can be a way of unsettling them, and Klopp's sides did that. Tottenham tried to do that, and the way they did it was to press the two fullbacks, press Fernandinho. There's no easy out ball from the back. So all that happens then is Edison starts picking 50-yard passes rather than 10-yard passes.
And all of a sudden you've got Leroy Sané 1-1 with Kieran Trippier, yeah, and City are in.
So in that game, I think I'm right in saying that Edison completed 19 long passes, so more than 30-yard passes, as opposed to a season average of 4.7.
Which is incredible for a goalkeeper.
But 19 long-range passes is absurd.
You know.
And that is of course, a huge part of the Cruyff methodology. Sort of one of the things people, I think, tend to forget or tend not to talk about, that he, even in 74, I mean, it was partly a financial issue, but the reason he wanted Youngblut there was, Youngblut was a better passer. He felt that they needed that passing ability at the back. When he was Ajax manager in the mid-80s, he insisted on having Stanley Menzo in goal, who was widely seen as being sort of slightly eccentric in the way the term is used of goalkeepers, i.e. drops things, but a great passer. And Cruyff wanted the goalkeeper who could be a playmaker from the back, because he knew that other teams would be very reluctant to have one of their outfielders press a keeper, because then you're leaving somebody else free. Mm.
And something you said earlier, Jack, about Cruyff sticking to his principles, not diluting them, did that with the goalkeeper. And John Stones wasn't the starting centre-back for the whole season, but played a significant portion of it, came under a lot of criticism. And what did Guardiola do? He came out and he backed John Stones and said, this is a player I love. I love this player and I license him to play this way, and he's going to make mistakes. But Guardiola doubled down and said, this is how we're doing it. You can write what you want, and that's what we're going with.
Yeah, and I know that Pep said to John Stones in private that, like, whatever happens, stick to the plan. Don't go long. However much pressure you're under on the pitch, we've just got to keep playing it out from the back. And Stones is technically good enough to do that. And then he goes in January, let's not forget, he broke the transfer record to sign another centre-back, in Aymeric Laporte, who plays in a similar way. So that I think, you know, I'm sure if we're starting to think how City will look in a year or two's time, when, you know, Kompany will play less, Otamendi will probably play less, like Stones and Laporte will both be playing that way kind of for this... you know, indefinitely for City, I think.
And that's a very Cruyffian idea that, this relates to the goalkeeper's issue, that Cruyff said, I don't mind if my goalkeeper gets lobbed from 40 yards because he's playing out of his box. If the opposition want to keep shooting from 40 yards, let them. One in 20 might go in. But we will accept that because the benefit of having a keeper playing outside of the box, the benefit of having him sweeping up outside of the box, allows us to play a much higher line, and it allows him to play as a playmaker. So you may not, the benefits may not be as obvious as the negative, but the overall impact is beneficial.
Sure.
So, you know, Stones may make mistakes, and maybe those mistakes cost 4 or 5 goals a season, but playing out from a back brings you 12, 15 goals a season, mm-hmm. and it's therefore worth it. The problem is that for us, and for fans, and for anybody just watching the game, what stands out isn't Stones making, you know, 80 passes a game. It's the one he doesn't make because the cost of goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it that requires a great mental strength and faith from the Stone, you know, Stones or Stanley Menz or whoever to say, well, actually, you don't know what you're talking about. that okay, I made a mistake there, and that's part of how I play. But actually, that's just inherent in this philosophy.
Mm. And going back to the match itself, Liverpool 4, Manchester City 3, you said a little bit earlier that Tottenham tried to press Manchester City and Edison just said, well, that's a fine, we'll just do this and we'll beat you 4-1 or whatever it was. How did Klopp then get success when he pressed them? You know, what was it about the way Klopp approached the game and has approached 8 out of these 14 encounters he had with Pep Guardiola that's made him successful in those games?
I think that's... There's a danger here of always looking at the result, not the process,
mm-hmm.
which is something that Juan Marlio, who's a great, you know, one of Guardiola's mentors, you know, he went to Dorados in Mexico to play for him. Something that he said, you know, that you can get hung up on results, and sometimes the process is actually what you should be looking at. That things can just go wrong in football. So I think actually Tottenham didn't do that much wrong in the 4-1 defeat. They played it the right way. But there's a risk in doing that. And that's why teams don't do that, which of course makes it easier for City because teams aren't taking that risk. Liverpool are quicker than Tottenham. That's clearly true. And that pace managed to induce panic. But you think of the game, you think of that Oxlade-Chamberlain shot after 9 minutes that sets Liverpool on the way. How many times in the last 5 years of Oxlade-Chamberlain's career have we actually seen him drive forward through midfield and ping a shot from 25 yards that goes in, you know, within a foot of the post? That's something he hasn't really done. So if that hadn't happened, would the game have worked the same way? Perhaps not. So it's a combination, I think, of, you know, greater pace, greater physicality. You think of how Firmino scores the second goal, which is basically just using his body, out-muscling a defender. So you know, there is that extra physicality. But I think to an extent, it's just the way the game happened to fall. I think it's not ridiculous to suggest that Tottenham could also have won 4-3 and Liverpool could also have lost 4-1, taking the risk, although Tottenham got hammered for it, and was the right thing to do.
And by the same token, when Liverpool lost 5-0 at City earlier in the season, at the start of the season, they could easily have won that game. Like, they were, in the first half an hour, Salah kept on getting in behind Otamendi in a way which has actually felt like an omen for the Champions League game and the 4-3, when that same move happened every time. But this was before Salah was really in his top goal-scoring form. He couldn't score any of his chances. Then, of course, Mane gets sent off for trying to kick Edison's head off. And it's actually quite easy for City to get in and start racking up the goals in the second half.
I think that, you know, that point with Mane is actually, it's a real sort of point of comparison between the 5-0 and the 4-3, that Mane's not that far from getting to the ball. I'm not saying it's not a red card. Of course it's a red card. But he's, you know, 0.1, 0.2 of a second from winning that ball. He wins the ball and he's 30 yards out with an open goal, which is kind of what happens for the fourth goal in the 4-3, that Edison's put under pressure, clears it. Not actually as bad a clearance as many people made out, but it hits Salah on the halfway line and he pings the ball back over his head. So if those two instances, you could easily imagine transposed into the opposite games and the results being very different.
Mm. And so looking ahead into the future, Jonathan, where do we see then in a few years' time, will this kind of idea of the Cruyffian principles, they'll always be there somewhere in football, of course, and people will still use that word, Cruyffian, as well. But as the years go by, are we going to talk about Guardiola-rian, or however you would say that?
Yeah, I think we might. I mean, it's really to do with whether his players go on to become coaches themselves. So the reason that we call Guardiola a post-Cruyffian is because he learned his philosophy, he learned his style of play from Cruyff. and was then influenced by Van Gaal and Menotti and Leo and Bielsa and countless others. But it's Cruyff's ideas that he is taken on. So there will be a generation of players who've played for Guardiola who have no direct knowledge of Cruyff. So in the same way that we wouldn't think of Guardiola as being a post-Michaels player, he's learned from somebody who learned from Michaels. So in the same way, I don't know, John Stones in 15 years, maybe, you know, a post-Guardiola coach,
mm-hmm.
Being criticised for playing overly risky football as his Barnsley side romped to the Premier League.
Do you know, it's a wonderful thought, and it's something I hope we see happen. Jack, with Guardiola, something that, again, we'll talk about in later podcasts in this series, that Cruyff almost invented the idea of a good way to play football against a bad way of playing football. And Guardiola, there's an element, whether it's comes from him or not, it's certainly there. And I think perhaps one of the things about the English media was it was a case of, well, there's lots of ways to play football. How dare you suggest our traditional ways is not valid? Do you see that as a part of Cruyff's legacy as well with Guardiola, that nowadays people tend to think there is a good way and bad way of playing football?
You often hear Guardiola saying things like, you know, I've got so much respect for every style of playing. Every style of playing is valid. And you know,
apart from Nathan Redmond in that game.
And you know it's not what he thinks. He's just being, because he's like a football manager, he doesn't know what it means to be sincere or insincere. Like he doesn't. And so it's not like whenever they're playing, you know, because often they're playing against the long ball team or whatever, and he'll get asked about it, and he'll say, oh, I have full respect for Sam Allardyce, full respect for David Moyes. But you know that's, you know, you know that he thinks there, well, I certainly think that he thinks that there is a kind of like moral element, as mm-hmm. well as an art, or like connected to the artistic element of how he wants to play, there's also like a moral element. Like this is, it's not just that it works, it's that it's more like interesting and better to look at, and it's therefore, it's enriching the game in a way that like just trying to win the next game in whatever way you can is not enriching in the same way.
And that's a very Barcelona way of thinking. If you see any interview with Xavi since he finished playing in Europe. And he bangs on about that all the time and mocks Real Madrid for doing the opposite.
That's unlike Xavi.
But I think it's also, Guardiola's in a very fortunate position that there are only certain teams who can play that way. And I think we'll probably touch on this in the next podcast, but it is easier to play like that with a super club now than it was 20 years ago, because the super clubs are so much superer, more better, richer, have more resources than the next tier down. And so, you know, if you look at possession stats in English football, to have more than 70% possession, one team more than 70% possession in a game, used to be incredibly rare. So look at the first 3 years of Opta collected stats, only three examples in the Premier League, in 3 years mm-hmm. of one team having 70% or more possession. This last season, I think it's 67 games where it happened. That's a huge jump. Now, part of that is that Guardiola has not just changed the game being at City, but people have seen how his Barcelona played. They've become used to this idea of one team having a lot of the ball. And if you don't have a ball, well, you can still win the game. You've just got to keep your shape and you can play without the ball. And Mourinho's taken that on and run with it. But it's also partly because some teams are just much richer than others in a way that was never quite the case before. And the poorer team sort of shrugs and goes, well, what else can we do? So you saw that, I think, really obviously with Newcastle against Manchester City, the game between Christmas and New Year this last season, when Newcastle just sat in their own box, punted it long to whoever was playing centre forward for them, which I think was Hosseley that day, and there was no attempt to push up and support him.
It was damage limitation.
And they were only 1-0 down in the last 10 minutes and actually caused City problems. Mm. So I wrote a piece about that and got heavily criticised by Newcastle fans, but I wasn't criticising Newcastle. I was sort of saying this is the way it is. This is mm-hmm. the way they play, and actually, it nearly worked. And I don't object to Rafa Benitez doing that. You've got to do what you can do with the resources you have, and that's where I think Guardiola's moralising sticks in some people's craws. That, well, it's very easy to moralise when you have these resources, when you can play that way. You try going and managing Burnley or Brighton or West Brom or Stoke, and yeah. Maybe you would understand why you can't always play like that.
Absolutely. And perhaps the person that moralising that Guardiola and Cruyff have done, that the person that annoys the most is Jose Mourinho, Jack. And in the 2017-18 season, Guardiola quite handedly got the better of Mourinho in the league.
Yeah, completely. I mean, this is something that Jonathan's written about a lot, is the relationship between Mourinho and his ideas and Pep and his ideas. But I'm sure it will clearly have stung Mourinho a huge amount that he arrived in England for this particular stint in 2016, kind of on a level footing with Guardiola, in the sense that they were both inheriting teams who'd underperformed for the last few seasons. City maybe had a slightly better squad, perhaps. They've spent more or less a similar amount of money over the last 2 years. And yet the end result is so different. Like, City have got a brilliant team who've broken records and won the Premier League and are maybe not adored but admired by everyone, whereas Manchester United are kind of more or less in the same place that Mourinho found them. Well, slightly better. They came second this year, but they're not much better.
But then there's no great incentive where Manchester United are on telly. You don't think, right, I've got to rush home and turn the TV on. I mean, I guess we do because it's our job. But
But the fans, I know, certainly wouldn't.
United. And I think even the cup final this season, there was no great excitement for, because it's United against this fading Chelsea with Conte on the way out. So there's a sort of, and I guess that's maybe where the moral aspect does come in. There's a joylessness to United that sort of feels offensive because they've had so many opportunities, and they should be playing the football of the super clubs, and they're not.
And I mean, this is a bit of a pub conversation, but I'm sure that if Pep was managing this United squad, they'd be miles better. Like, and even though even with players that he hadn't necessarily picked, like he would make far better use of Mata. He would have made a lot of very good use of Mkhitaryan. I'm sure he would have got more out of Pogba. All the individual, I just think his way of playing is better suited to modern top players. And I think I'm sure they would enjoy it far more than the Mourinho way, which looks increasingly outdated.
Yeah, and we're going to go on in the third podcast of this series to talk about Mourinho's Chelsea, and particularly those epic games against Barcelona. And you compare the pace of that Chelsea side to the modern United, and there is no comparison. And I think there's almost a tendency, I don't want to say that Mourinho is ruining his legacy, but there is a tendency to sort of project what's happening now on the past and think of that Chelsea being quite stodgy. They're really not. They attack with incredible pace, and those quick transitions you think of as being typical of Guardiola or Klopp in a different way, well, they were typical of Mourinho back then and seemingly are not to the same degree now.
Absolutely right. A little peek behind the curtain there for one of the episodes we're going to come on to in this podcast series. But thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this first of a six-part series to coincide with the release of The Barcelona Legacy, a book that explores how the evolution of today's game begins at Barcelona 25 years ago with the pioneering ideas of Johan Cruyff, and was taken on by the likes of Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. And of course, the book is written by Jonathan Wilson. Jonathan, thank you very much. And Jack, pleasure. We'll see you next time for episode 2. It's all right, Luke. I know the World Cup's over for another 4 years, but don't worry, we've got all this to look forward to.
Well, if you want any sort of basic mind game against Mark, you just don't shake his hand. Yeah, it's just out in the open.
You'd have to be a brave man.
I was going
to
say.
There's an interview with Sean Dyche. And have you heard how bad his voice has got now?
It is getting worse. I thought it was.
To be honest, if someone's recently been kidnapped, they're probably not listening to the ramble.
No.
That's not the...
Unless they're being tortured.
Former torture, yeah.
The Football Ramble. Back for a new season. Monday, 6th of August. Dry your eyes, mate.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.